On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Right after 9/11, the CIA's counterterrorism chief vowed to take the gloves off and promised President Bush heads on spikes in the fight with Al-Qaeda. It looked so simple then. Last week, as Bush flew into Italy on his European tour, two dozen CIA agents went on trial in Milan for exactly that gloves-off push. Tried in absentia, charged with abducting a Muslim cleric off the street in Milan and flying him to Egypt, where he says he was tortured. Extraordinary rendition, it's called. Italian prosecutors call it kidnapping. Up next on Point, the whole story. The CIA on trial. We will hear later in this hour from a former top CIA official who was at the head of America's counterterrorism programs. But joining me first today from Rome is Carlo Bonini, investigative reporter at La Repubblica, leading daily Italian newspaper. He's co-author of the book Collusion, International Espionage and the War on Terror. He has scored some of the biggest scoops since 9/11, exposing manipulation in the Niger Yellowcake affair, which influenced the decision to go to war in Iraq, and the CIA's alleged abduction of a Muslim cleric in Milan. Carlo Bonini is expected to testify in the current trial of CIA agents in Italy. Mr. Bonini, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for you. Hello.
Can you remind us of the basics of this case? What happened here?
Well, the story is quite simple. On a cold day on February 2003, an Egyptian cleric named Abu Omar was kidnapped by a squad of CIA agents and at least two or three Italian citizens, allegedly from the Italian security law enforcement forces. Abu Omar was kidnapped and was transferred to an U.S. Military facility in the northeast part of Italy, Aviano, and from there he was flown to El Cairo, Egypt, where he was basically formally arrested, and thrown in a jail where he spent 3 years being badly tortured in order to confess an alleged participation in Al-Qaeda ring. Abu Omar was set free 4 months ago by the Egyptian authorities, and he decided to sue the Italian government as well as the U.S. government for his kidnapping.
He says he was tortured, electric wires hooked to his genitals, hung on the wall in solitary for days, subjected to loud music and headphones and tiny cell full of rats. Were any charges ever brought against him? Was he formally tried? Was he found guilty of something?
No, never. As far as we know, and as far as the Egyptian authorities themselves have been saying till now, he was merely a suspect. He was asked when he arrived in Egypt back in February 2003. He was asked to be enrolled as a covert, as a spy, basically, as a covert anti-terror agent, in order to reveal and to find out Al-Qaeda plot. And actually, this guy said, "I have nothing to do with that." And so he was basically put in jail with no formally charge, at least in Egypt. I mean, Abu Omar was charged in Italy for alleged participation to Al-Qaeda ring, but when he was charged, it was too late because at that time he had been kidnapped by CIA agents in Milan.
So now we have 25 CIA operatives, plus an American Air Force colonel, plus half a dozen Italians on trial in this trial, including the former head of intelligence for Italy. What are the charges here?
Well, the charge are is basically just one, is kidnapping. And the charge is a serious charge according to the Italian law, because this kind of charge for a public officer has the former chief of the Italian intelligence was at the time, is a serious offense, because he basically not only he broke the law kidnapping a foreign citizen, but he broke the law because he broke our constitutional principles. I mean, according to the Italian constitution, you cannot give up your sovereignty to anybody, not even to your best ally, and that's what happened here. I mean, the Italian intelligence helping the U.S. intelligence in kidnapping a foreign citizen on its soil gave up the Italian sovereignty, and that's something that you cannot do.
Can you describe the scene in the courtroom on Friday in Milan? We understand the judge going through, reading the indictment, ticking off the Americans' 26 names and 26 times repeating, because they were not there, repeating fugitive, fugitive, fugitive.
Yeah, they will be. I mean, the trial will be held in absentia. I mean, according to what the public prosecutor knows, and according to what we know, the U.S. citizens, the U.S. defendants in this trial will not show up, not in the next week, not even in the next months. According to the Italian authorities, the U.S. authorities refused to handle the U.S. citizens who are defendants in this trial, and there are two pro bono lawyers defending the U.S. citizens, and so basically it will be quite an ominous trial, because you will have lots of witnesses, you will have an incredible story told in the courthouse, and you will not hear a single voice from the defendants themselves, but not even from U.S. authorities. I mean, the State Department, the Department of Justice, simply decided to ignore the existence of this trial.
Many of the CIA agents were using cover names, not the real names, so it's hard to know exactly who they are, but not all of them. The former Milan, station chief of the CIA, Robert Selden Lady, initially hired an attorney here, filed some motions, but recently is quoted saying, "The agency has told me to keep quiet and let this blow over." So he's not showing up, they're not showing up, but they were there in 2003. What's come out in the trial about how this kidnapping or abduction or extraordinary rendition, how did it actually take place, Mr. Bonini?
Well, there are many, many evidences in this trial. The more important ones are the phone call traffic. The CIA squad left lots of fingerprints on the scene, meaning that there were the investigation could come up with at least 100-150 phone calls between cell phones used by the U.S. agents during the kidnap. They could trace the phone call. They could see on tracing the phone calls when Abu Omar was transferred to the U.S. military facility in the Northeast. Then the Bob Selden Lady country house was raided, and lots of material was seized, and among them pictures shot of Abu Omar shot on the street a couple of days before his kidnap, and emails, everything that proved, I think, beyond any reasonable doubt that he played a role in the kidnap.
They've got bills for rental cars and expensive meals and $500 a night hotels what's been described as a kind of operational sloppiness, or to look at it another way, such openness in this that it indicates to many that the CIA believed the Italian government was behind them. So is this a kind of double cross by the Italian government? Are they now, they were in on the deal, and now they're leaving the CIA out to dry, hanging it out to dry?
Well, I think that that's the second case. I mean, I don't think that there was a sloppiness in the operation. Simply, the operation was a sort of routine operation, a holiday operation. I mean, just imagine that according to the evidences the public prosecutors pulled out in the trial, the U.S. intelligence asked for a formal green light from the Italian intelligence, from the Italian government. So once the U.S. intelligence received this green light, everything was set. And so, I mean, this bunch of U.S. agents on abroad in Italy for a couple of weeks had an incredible good time. I mean, the operation had nothing dangerous. And you can imagine, I mean, if you are in an ally country with the full cooperation of the local intelligence and of the full cooperation of the local government, you don't have anything to be scared about. So I think that when the investigation began, it was really something out of the blue for the U.S. administration. What happened here was that probably the Bush administration bet on Berlusconi's government, and that was not a good bet.
We're being briefed here by Carlo Bonini, reporter for La Repubblica, joining us from Rome in Italy. I'm joined right now from New York by Meg Satterthwaite. She's a law professor and director of the Center for Human Rights and Global Justice at New York University. Meg, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks very much for having me.
And we are joined now from Washington by Bob Grenier. He's former director of the CIA's Counterterrorism Center from 2005 to 2006, longtime CIA officer who helped plan the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, CIA station chief in Pakistan when the terrorists of 9/11/01 occurred. He's now managing director at Kroll Associates, a global risk and security consulting company. Bob Grenier, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Let me go first to you. You were in the middle of all this stuff. I don't want to use that too broadly, but there was a lot going on after, was it Kofor Black promised heads on spikes to President Bush? How do you look at this trial in Italy now? Does this look like a betrayal by Italy of American cooperation, American anti-terror efforts, or does it, you know, you heard Carlo Bonini say Italy's saying this is our sovereignty and we can't sacrifice it. We've got to step up legally here. How do you see it?
Well, obviously, there's not very much that I can say about the charges that stand. They are what they are, and there's nothing that I can say that would confirm them or would shed any light on them. But I think if you just take the situation at face value, as it was laid out by Mr. Bonini, it clearly points out some inconsistencies, if you will, in the policies of our allies. On the one hand, you have these charges that are being brought forward. You have a public prosecutor who is making them. On the other hand, you have the Italian government, which is stepping in and has appealed to the Constitutional Court,
right,
asking them to set this trial aside. So, at a minimum, this is a rather extraordinary situation, and it suggests, at least, that some of our closest allies who want to do the responsible thing, what they regard as the responsible thing to protect their citizens and other citizens around the world, do not feel that they have the legal means at their disposal to do what they believe they need to do.
Meg, you're the lead attorney in a lawsuit filed last week by six human rights groups against the U.S. government demanding names of detainees in secret prisons, and we've heard news on that front from Europe in the last few days as well. Your group also published the names last week of 39 people that you say are being held secretly as ghost detainees. What do you make of this Italian trial?
Well, I think it's important for a number of reasons. First, it's really the first time we've had any challenge on the merits, as opposed to on procedural grounds or on state secrecy grounds, to the extraordinary rendition program. And what that means is that you'll actually have evidence that will be tested in a court of law about this procedure. That's incredibly important since in the U.S. we really have mostly had media accounts and sort of debates about what might or might not be happening. What's also important about the case is that it does really shine a light on the cooperation that's required in carrying out actions like extraordinary rendition. And I do think that Mr. Grenier is right that there's a little bit of maybe, I don't want to use the word hypocrisy, but there's a little bit of ambiguity in on the part of our European allies who have, as we know now, been host to secret detention sites, but who also very clearly support the standards of the European Commission, the European Court on Human Rights, and the European Convention on Human Rights.
Carla Bonini, what about it? Hypocrisy on Italy's part, cooperating at one point, now turning around. Of course, you've got a new leader in Italy, but President Bush was there just last week sitting down with the old one as well, Berlusconi, for a private meeting. Is this hypocrisy for Italy now to suddenly get on its high horse legally, or is this the reassertion of the rule of law?
I think it's a hypocrisy. I do agree with both your guests. It's definitely a clear case study of international policy and hypocrisy. The problem here, I think, is that there was a sort of naive approach by the Bush administration in this. I don't know what was the decisional process behind the decision of kidnapping Abu Omar, of the extraordinary rendition of Abu Omar, but I would have expected a little bit more cautious approach to the issue. Italy is famous not only in the last few years, but the international policy of Italy has been always not so solid time to time. And there is another thing that the Bush administration is paying now. Probably Washington didn't realize when he could that there was a new wind was blowing over Europe. Six years after September 11, I do think that the extraordinary legacy of those terrible days is now vanished, at least in Europe. Recent general elections in Spain, in Germany, in Italy put in place new governments, new majorities, and the problem here is that the general wisdom, especially in Southern Europe, Italy and Spain, has dramatically changed. I would say that a week after September 11, almost 99.9% of the Italian would have said, yeah, we can kidnap Abu Omar. Right now, probably it's no more than 10% or 20%. Now, the local governments used to go where the people want them to go. And that's what is happening now. The new government is desperately trying to help the U.S. administration on this trial. But on the other hand, the new government knows very well that the Italians want the rule of law reestablished in the war on terror.
Bob Gernier, let me ask you about that. You say hypocrisy here. And yet on the home front, just yesterday, we had the Fourth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals rejecting the president's claims that he had the power to decide who combatants were inside the United States, to have civilians picked up and thrown into military prisons for just as long as he wanted to keep them there. If U.S. courts are, turning now in their view of some of these extraordinary steps, is it really hypocrisy for Italian courts to turn as well? Or is it a kind of a sobering up after the shock of 9/11?
Well, I didn't call it hypocrisy. I did call it, however, inconsistency. I think that we are faced with a similar situation within the United States. Now, I don't think that we have had an evolution of the position of U.S. courts on this issue. In the case of Jose Padilla, there too, that the court said that if this individual was arrested in the United States, that he would have to be given full constitutional protections and would not and could not stay within the military system. Now, obviously, that is an issue that the administration is still fighting and is perhaps destined to lose. But it points up again the issue of how do we deal with individuals who don't seem to fall into traditional categories. If we're talking about an individual who is a committed terrorist, And I don't know about the case of Mr. Al-Mari, but there are many terrorists who are currently in custody, for instance, at Guantanamo, who state very clearly that if ever released, they will go about doing whatever they possibly can to kill as many Westerners as possible. These are people who certainly consider themselves to be at war, and yet... What does one do in a situation where the laws and the constitutional protections in place for, say, people within the United States simply do not permit us to protect our and other citizens from these individuals who clearly pose a long-term threat?
Well, but is that still the case? Is that still the way we're looking at it? I mean, have we learned something from these cases and the pushback? Colin Powell was saying over the weekend he would close down Guantanamo. He said on Sunday he'd close it down this afternoon. Not that he'd let them all go, but he'd bring them into the legal system, put them in regular prisons subject to regular American law. We could have another terrorist attack easily, I suppose. From the vantage of the CIA, as you understand it, outside now, do they really feel they cannot fight this battle and stay within international law as we know it?
Well, I think a part of the difficulty that we're all dealing with here is that the international system, the international legal system, if you will, is clearly inadequate to the task that's before us. If you have the case of a known terrorist who is arrested, say, in a country like Pakistan, whose legal and judicial system really cannot responsibly deal with this individual, and where there are not extradition agreements in place that would permit this person to be returned to the countries where he may have committed his crimes and or to his country of origin, something really needs to be done. And because of this inadequacy in the global system, it's the U.S. which has taken the responsibility, stepped forward and said, okay, we will try to expedite, for instance, the movement of a given terrorist to a place where he can be legally handled.
Expedite or kidnap, handled or torture. It all depends how you look at it these days. Let's take some calls here. Joshua is calling from Iowa City. Joshua, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How's it going?
It's all right. What do you see, Josh?
Well, I was a U.S. Army interrogator at the Abu Ghraib prison in West Baghdad from June of 2004 to January of 2005. And
okay.
The main problem I have with the commentators who are talking about the hypocrisy of Italy is that it's a wrong issue of context, because we're not talking about the breaches of international law that the U.S. has been involved with for years. And as an interrogator who has had plenty of experience dealing with detainees in the war on terrorism, specifically in Iraq, and friends of mine who were ordered to torture detainees, it's about time that a European country finally had the guts to stand up to U.S. foreign policy.
You're saying you wished you had been, what, more within the realm of law in Abu Ghraib?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have friends whose psychological lives have been devastated because they were directly ordered to use techniques like induced hypothermia, where you strip a man naked during winter, pour ice-cold water over his body, and then repeatedly take his rectal temperature. The use of dogs, the use of sensory deprivation, sensory overload. These kinds of things are systematic. They're used throughout the theater of operations, and Congress is not doing a single thing to address the issue. Senator McCain, had about a 12-minute rebuttal of the language of the 2006 Military Commissions Act, and then he caved. And if the U.S. can't stand up on the issues of human rights, and even just appropriate interrogation techniques as far as tactics are concerned, then it's about time that a European country stood up to us.
Well, the Congress may do something soon on this. There's action in the Senate. We'll hear about that later. Joshua, thank you very much for your call. Meg, there's a caller who says, hey, I was in Abu Ghraib. I saw what happened. I'd rather have international law enforced than this going on. But you hear Bob Grenier, he was in the middle up with the CIA, saying the legal system internationally is inadequate to the challenge of terrorism. Where do you see it? How do you see it?
Well, first, I'd like to really commend the caller. I think that was a very brave call to make, and it's the kind of call and discussion that I've had with a number of people, people within the military who are very upset about the higher levels of command who actually did implement and order certain techniques that actually amount under international law to torture quite clearly and to cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment. I don't actually think there is an inadequacy in international law. What we really need to see here is the rule of law coming back in to supervise and check the excesses. So the two programs we're talking about today, extraordinary rendition and secret detention, are both illegal under international law, and both would require normally, either if you're transferring someone or if you're going to detain them, that you've got to give some basic due process guarantees. So just, you know, in layman's terms, tell the person why they're being held and give them an opportunity to contest whatever evidence may be held against them. And what instead we're seeing is informal procedures. Kidnapping is one way of talking about it for the case of rendition, and then secretly detaining people, which is really just kidnapping them and then placing them in sites where they're completely lost and they're not protected by the law. So that's the first thing to say. The second is, if there are gaps, the gaps are often in cooperation among countries. So if there's a problem with the lack of an extradition treaty, for example, what needs to happen is that there needs to be pressure in order to create an extradition treaty or to create potentially an agreement whereby an individual be brought back to the U.S. to face regular criminal charges for terrorism. We certainly have an excellent set of anti-terror laws here in the U.S., and there's no reason that we couldn't work together with our allies to bring regular charges against people, extradite them, and then place them before a regular court of law where they have their human rights protected. Mm.
Carlo Bonini, in Rome, you had Milan's lead prosecutor Armando Spataro saying last week, "We want to punish terrorists, but in the courtroom, within the full respect of the laws of our Western democracies." What's expected in Italy now? Are people expecting the highest court to throw this out? If it goes to trial, is there any expectation that these men would ever be extradited? Is this a symbolic trial in that sense?
Well, regarding the U.S. defendants, it will. There is no expectation that the U.S. administration will extradite the defendants in case of the verdict of guilty. On the other hand, the verdict in case of if the Italian defendants are found guilty, for the Italian defendants it will be quite a harsh verdict because they are facing at least 15 years in jail.
And we're talking Italy's former top spymaster and his number two, right up at the top of intelligence there.
Yeah, and then we are talking about at least four more high Italian intelligence officers.
Carlo Bonini, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks.
I want to listen back for just a moment to President Bush just last September, after it came out in the Washington Post that there was this network of secret prisons. President Bush stepped up at a news conference on September 6th last year, admitted the existence of those prisons holding terrorism suspects. In that same speech, laid out his proposal for military commissions to try detainees. That's now in trouble with the courts. And said suspects in secret prisons were being transferred to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba.
In addition to the terrorists held at Guantanamo, a small number of suspected terrorist leaders and operatives captured during the war have been held and questioned outside the United States in a separate program operated by the Central Intelligence Agency. This group includes individuals believed to be the key architects of the September the 11th attacks and attacks on the USS Cole. An operative involved in the bombings of our embassies in Kenya and Tanzania, and individuals involved in other attacks that have taken the lives of innocent civilians across the world. These are dangerous men with unparalleled knowledge about terrorist networks and their plans of new attacks. The security of our nation and the lives of our citizens depend on our ability to learn what these terrorists know. Many specifics of this program including where these detainees have been held and the details of their confinement, cannot be divulged.
Cannot be divulged in detail, but there's the president saying what had not been said. Bob Grenier, formerly of the CIA, is with us, and Meg Satterthwaite at NYU in New York. Right now, also from Washington, Josh Meyer joins us. He covers terrorism for the Los Angeles Times. Josh, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom.
Pretty severe pushback from the Italian court in Milan on this, but there is also action on Capitol Hill. The Senate Intelligence Committee looking at this as part of its funding for U.S. intelligence. What's going on there? Is there a move to end some of this extra legal activity?
Well, there's certainly some movement towards that. I don't know if it's going to be successful or not, but a Senate committee passed a bill that set funding levels for U.S. spy agencies, suggested that the CIA's secret prisons overseas should be shut down unless the Bush administration can demonstrate that they are, quote, necessary, lawful, and in the best interests of the United States.
And does there seem to be a majority in the Senate ready to push on that? Is there a sense on Capitol Hill today that this, you know, outside-the-box stuff has failed in some way, if not materially, though maybe there too, but in terms of world opinion?
I think so, sure. I this committee report was a non-binding report, and it's part of the Democrats' increasing oversight, over the programs that the Bush administration has been pushing, including the renditions and the secret jails and so on and so forth. This is a part of a fresh attack by Congress on the five-year-old detention program. It has been credited with providing valuable intelligence on terrorism, but it's been condemned by other countries, and now it's being condemned by a growing number of U.S. lawmakers.
The Fourth Circuit ruling yesterday that it's unconstitutional for civilians to be grabbed off the streets in this country and put into military prisons. So U.S. courts stepping up in their own way on these issues, Josh.
Yes. In fact, I thought this was a tremendous setback for the Bush administration. I mean, more so legal experts think that it was a tremendous setback, people that know a lot more about it than I do. Essentially, what the Circuit Court of Appeals said was that an alleged al-Qaeda operative, Ali Salah Kala Al-Mari, who was arrested in the United States and detained in a military custody for 4 years, cannot be held as an enemy combatant, and that he deserves either to be released or tried in a criminal court.
The Justice Department saying it's going to step in and work on that, but that at the same time that Alberto Gonzalez is under so much pressure, that department being described as in shambles by a leading Republican senator yesterday. That's an odd juxtaposition.
Well, they may be in shambles, but I'm absolutely positive that they will appeal this case, and they'll do it very quickly. They're going to try to appeal it en banc to the entire Fourth Circuit, which means going to all the judges in the circuit court who are considered to be much more conservative than these two judges who made the ruling. But I'm told that if that doesn't work, they'll take it to the Supreme Court.
So looking at what
which
really
has a conservative majority.
Yes, it does indeed. We're looking at what really needs to be done here. Let's take a call from Germany. Waltrop, Germany. Jochen is on the line. Hi. What do you say, my friend, in Germany?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was an exchange student to the U.S. 50 years ago. Well, 40 years ago, not quite that long.
Okay.
And what I learned about democracy, rule of law, most of that I learned in America. And I'm just dismayed to see what's happening these days with people sort of erring rather on the side of safety and security than on the side of freedom and democracy.
But at a certain point, safety and security are important, aren't they? I mean, you heard our former CIA guest saying they can't work within this international legal system effectively. So what should be done?
Well, of course you can. I mean, we've had some of the 9/11 support network out of Hamburg going on trial. The guys who tried to blow up the train in Cologne. One of them is on trial in Germany, the other one in Lebanon. So, yes, if we give up the normal procedure of the rule of law, we're giving up our freedom and the stuff that we're fighting for and that we're standing for.
How do you see Germans looking at the United States now in your circle, Jochen, all in this alliance?
Well, one has to differentiate between how we look at America and how we look at the present administration, because very often criticism is perceived as being anti-American, which it is not at all. But we're very, very critical of the present administration. America, and I keep going back and forth between Germany and America, and America has changed so dramatically since 9/11, even before. But it is a country hardly to be recognized any longer from abroad.
There's a view from Germany, and thanks very much for calling in. Let's get one more from Hartford, Connecticut. Joe, you're on the air.
Hi there. How are you?
Very well. What do you see?
Good. Yes. One of the issues that I was looking at is the fact that this is an international law that's being violated. Now, Italy in itself up against the United States, that's a one-on-one. It sort of it may sort of illegitimize putting one-on-one against each other in terms of the entire procedure. What I think I would like to see is Italy making a request to the other nations to see if they can get some sort of participation in the trial to more legitimize the proceedings, to more legitimize the charges, and it'll really make the United States have to really take notice that this is not just one idea against another. This is America's concept against international law for many countries.
But isn't it enough if an Italian court steps up and takes it on? It's a sovereign country. It has every right to take it on itself, doesn't it?
Oh, I'm not saying, no, it does have every right, but what I believe is that it should also have some, because this is actually an international situation, it's not just Italy in itself. I mean, they should have some sort of public overseeing, if not necessarily overseeing, some form of small communication between or representation on this issue, because today it might be Italy, tomorrow it might be another country.
Yeah. Joe, we've got it, and thank you very much for your call. Bob Grenier, how about it? You're watching the headlines, too. You and Josh Myers describing what's going on Capitol Hill. You've got headlines from right around the world. Our caller from Germany, you can feel a sea change on this. As a former CIA head of counterterrorism, you know, how does that factor in? How do you imagine it's going to change counterterrorism efforts if you see more resistance to this outside-the-boundaries activity developing and getting so explicit?
Well, I think that this sort of dialogue, both in the United States and indeed around the world, is actually a very useful and very healthy thing. And I think that it's important that all responsible voices get involved in this, because there are some extremely important countervailing issues that are at stake here. And I thought that this gentleman from Germany actually summed it up extremely well. There are issues of safety and security on one side and freedom and human rights on the other. And I think that somehow we need, as a global community, if you will, to reconcile those two. And you take a look at the legacy of some of the very aggressive efforts that have been made in the past by some allied countries who have faced very dangerous domestic terrorist threats. For instance, West Germany with the Red Army faction, the UK with the IRA. They have used some very extraordinary methods in order to detain, and including administrative detention and harsh questioning of suspects. Those, if one is going to use techniques like those under strict controls and with guard with appropriate safeguards against abuse, then there needs to be some dialogue around that. There need to be effective laws around that, and there needs to be public consensus around that. And I don't think, even in the United States, let alone as a global community, we're even close to that. But I think it is, people can take a reasonable, principled stand in favor of, if you will, the extension of post-Miranda rights to any and all terrorist detainees around the world. And I can certainly understand that sentiment. But people also who take that stand need to acknowledge the fact and to admit the fact that we, as a global community, will pay a price for that. People will die as a result of that. I'm not saying that that's necessarily a reason why we shouldn't do it. But in all intellectual honesty, given what we know about the information that has been acquired through CIA interrogations of terrorist detainees and the plots that we know have been thwarted as a result, we need to be willing to pay a price if, in fact, we are going to eschew those methods in any way, shape, or form.
Josh Meyer with the LA Times, you cover the intelligence community. Do you feel, I mean, there was concern, we know it's been reported within the CIA early on that CIA officers might end up exactly in this situation, prosecuted in courts of law for taking some of these steps. Do you feel a kind of retreat or cold feet on this front within the CIA from your reporting, Josh?
Well, I think that there's been a chilling effect on the CIA and other intelligence agencies. I think they're very afraid that sources and methods could be disclosed during this. I think that they're afraid that other countries, which already seem to have started this process, might start going after CIA agents operating overseas. They're also afraid that by sharing information with other countries and getting information from other countries, that those efforts will somehow be diminished because of this. I mean, I think one of the Italian authorities in the case in Rome right now in Milan is saying that that the Italian secret services are no longer secret. Nobody will trust them because of this case. That all the secrets are coming out, and that nobody will deal with them anymore. So I think that there's a lot of ripple effects in several ways.
Meg, your group has been raising a lot of noise about the so-called ghost detainees, 30 or 40, apparently alleged here in secret prisons around the world. Then you hear Bob Grenier say, look, if we don't take these kind of steps, a price will be paid in human life. How do you respond to that?
Well, I'd like to respond by saying two things. The first thing, I think, is just coming out of some of the conversation that's been going on the last few minutes, which is, there's not a question that secret detention is illegal under international law, and there's not a question that extraordinary rendition, that is transferring someone to a place where there's a known risk of torture, is illegal. So it's not a matter of sentiment. It's a matter of binding international law, and that's law that's binding on the U.S. through its ratification of a number of treaties. So that's just the first thing to sort of get out of the way. The second is to say that the very norms that we're talking about, norms around cruel and human degrading treatment and torture, and norms that prohibit a forced disappearance, which is, in effect, what we're doing when we secretly detain people, came out of the kinds of fights against terrorism that Mr. Grenier was referring to. And so what's important here is to note that we're actually trying to learn the lessons learned when other governments have committed excesses. So, you know, for example, Mr. Grenier brought up the example of the fight against the IRA in the UK and Northern Ireland. Well, the UK actually was criticized for a number of its techniques and had to change some of its policies based on a case that was brought against it in the European Court of Human Rights. So we're actually trying to learn the lessons and implement them and bring ourselves back in line with the rule of law.
Bob, when you left the CIA, the word in the reporting around that time was that you were resisting some of these extraordinary steps, that you weren't ready to be tough enough, as I recall one official being quoted about your departure. Did you have misgivings when you were in the saddle there?
No, I didn't have misgivings about what my agency was doing at that time. And in fact, Meg has just listed off a number of the criteria that have to be met in order to fall within the standards of international law, and I felt very strongly that we were doing that. What I was concerned about, however, was an issue that Josh raised a few minutes ago, that the fellow who was the former military interrogator, and that had to do with ensuring that there is appropriate legal sanction for whatever techniques are used. I mean, we can all agree in principle that cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment or punishment is and should be illegal. The big question is, well, what falls within that standard and what is outside it? And people who are engaged, people in the intelligence community, the CIA in particular, who are engaged in good faith in trying to do what they are entrusted by the American people to do, and to do it in a manner that is legal, need to be able to rely on legal judgments at the highest levels in the U.S. government. And that was what was at risk there, and I was very concerned about the possibility of ex post facto legal liability on the part of CIA personnel who were following the rules and acting in good faith.
And 25 of them facing exactly that right now in a court in Milan. Josh Meyer, our time is short, but, when we see the fire next time, if and when there's another terrorist attack, do you think some kind of new consensus has developed here that will keep some constraints on, or is it, all bets off, when the fire comes next time?
You mean on the part of Congress, or?
On the part of our intelligence agencies. Congress seems can barely keep up once events get in motion.
It's hard to say, Tom. I mean, the president himself has been a steadfast supporter of this program. It's clear that there are still efforts underway. I don't know if they're extraordinary renditions per se, but there have been other al-Qaeda suspects taken to Guantanamo just in the past few weeks. So there, it's clear that there are efforts underway to do this kind of work. Mm. And I think that when done correctly, it's an important part of the war on terrorism. Mm. So
Josh, with that, we're out of time, I'm afraid, but we're grateful to you for being with us. Josh Meyer at the LA Times. Bob Grenier was with the CIA, and Meg Satterthwaite at NYU. Thanks to all of you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.